On to case 12, 1867, Gossett versus Astrew. Good morning.
Your Honor. May it please the Court?
Brana.
This is a Social Security disability case, but it's different than the typical Social Security case that you see. In this case, we're asking for a remand for new and material evidence. I'm not going to stand up here and say the ALJ did this or the ALJ didn't do that. This is a case where we have submitted to the district court new and material evidence that was not available, wasn't even in existence when the administrative law judge made her decision.
What is it about Dr. Neville's opinion that allows us to, or would allow on a sentence 6 remand, the ALJ to draw the inference that Dr. Neville is describing Mr. Gossett's condition before the time period he was asked to address?
There are a couple things. One is that in his comments, and this is in an Exhibit B, and it's at Appendix page 35, he talks about claimant has been in treatment with his psychologist for 20 years and talks about the history of that treatment for those 20 years. So it's not just a matter of, oh, I'm looking at him right now. You know, his opinion is dated, or his assessment is dated July 28 of 2010, but he's talking about his entire history of psychiatric treatment.
So does the record show, other than this comment, which could have come either from Mr. Gossett or some other way, does the record show what documents Dr. Neville had in front of him? He didn't actually examine Mr. Gossett, right?
Correct. He works for the state agency in Indiana,
right,
which is...
So does he have the whole file in front of him, every doctor that ever looked at your client, et cetera?
Strongly suspect that, because that's typically the way it's done. He would have had access to everything that was in the file before the ALJ, at least that much.
I have a question for you, and then question for Mr. Denke, that because it appears that you sent the appeals counsel Dr. Tandy's letter and the new assessment of his RFC, right? But you did not send Dr. Neville's narrative. And what I am trying to figure out is why you didn't seek his narrative and forward it to the appeals counsel once that second application was granted.
And that was previous counsel, but I'm not going to throw him under the bus.
It's all you.
I know.
No.
Same as before. What ideally, as soon as that attorney got the decision on the second application, that attorney should have gone, this is great, and there must be something in this second file that led to this decision. Let me request the second file and see what's in there. Because the assessment from Dr. Neville is not sent. All that the attorney and Mr. Gossett received on the second application was, we have found you disabled. So they would have had to have requested the file, gotten in there, looked to see what was in there.
Do you know if previous counsel notified the appeals counsel of the favorable determination of that second application?
He did not, and neither did the agency. I mean, that's what should have also happened, is the agency
was in
itself.
That was my question.
It's their operating procedure is, once that second decision is rendered, there's supposed to be notification to the appeals council. That didn't happen by the agency. That didn't happen by previous counsel. So they should have known from their cohorts, but they apparently didn't, because that information would have been in this record if the appeals council had been notified of the allowance of the second application. That would have been in this record, and it's not.
Well, the first assessment, they had a full review of Dr. Tandy's testimony and whatever was in there. Then Dr. Neville takes a look at, as you point out, the 20 years that Dr. Tandy was treating him, and came up with a different opinion based on Dr. Tandy. Now, that's an interesting thing. Is that really new evidence or just a new observation on evidence already presented?
Well, and I think it's new evidence because this is an assessment by Dr. Neville is saying, yes, I'm looking at least part of what I'm looking at what was in the first file. I may be looking at additional things, and we don't know that.
But
then he's saying, okay, with my experience in evaluating these kinds of cases, and in my opinion, my analysis is it's much worse than the first person said. Certainly, it's
based on the same evidence.
Based on at least a lot of the same evidence. The other thing I would point out with
that. So you're almost talking about an intermediate level of fact. I mean, clearly these various experts, the doctors, the psychologists, everybody, are relying on the same raw data. But the difficult issue that I think Judge Mannion's getting at is what does it take for something to be new? Because if it's old evidence, you don't get a sentence six remand.
Right, correct.
And the raw data is old. The compilation of that data or the assimilation into an expert opinion is new. So what does it take under the statute?
Well, and that's, yeah, and I don't know that there's any, the statute doesn't say other than it has to be new. There's very, very little case law in this, not only from this court but other courts around the country on
the district judge kind of slides by that point.
And I must point out the government has waived that issue in the district court and here at this level. They haven't argued that. So the only issue here is Dr. Neville's assessment material. It has to be new. It has to be material. There has to be good cause. The only issue here is whether it's material. I also want to point out with respect to Dr. Neville's assessment in terms of does it apply to Mr. Gossett's condition before January 28 of 2010? One thing is that's all that on the second application, that's all the further back that they're allowed to go. So they didn't make a decision, there's simply no decision about whether on the second application whether he was disabled before January 28 of 2010. And on the mental residual functional capacity assessment, the first page, I also want to point out based on this July 28 of 2010 assessment, they went back to January 28 of 2010. So it's
but
not.
But you
like
know, there are always lines that have to be drawn. Right. I know you make a point of that. That strikes me as necessary. I mean, the agency has to have some finality in its.
And I'm not quarreling with that at all. But I'm just saying, if you're thinking about, well, gee, they already had a shot. They made a decision that he was disabled before January 28 of 2010. They did on the first app, but they did not on the second application. So, and then
that's why I wanted to know, what we can derive from Dr. Neville's evaluation about the longevity of this assessment. Because if he's looking at the full file from Dr. Tandy, then I can certainly see that he's taking the data from maybe a mixed period of time, maybe some of the data from before and some of the data from afterwards, and he's formulating a new expert opinion on that that would potentially be influential to the ALJ as to the earlier application.
Exactly, and I think that's exactly what's happened here. Thank you very much.
Okay, Mr. Denke.
Good morning, Your Honors.
I do want to start you right off, if you don't mind, because by regulation, wasn't the state agency itself supposed to forward Dr. Neville's narrative in the favorable decision to the Appeals Council, which then was required to consider the information in reaching its decision? So why shouldn't we remand this for the Appeals Council to do what it was required to do by regulation?
Well, a few reasons, Your Honor. Whether the state agency forwarded Dr. Neville's assessment to the Appeals Council or not does not establish that the appeals counsel should have considered it material evidence. And that's for a couple different reasons. You know, we focused a lot on whether Dr. Neville's opinion was retrospective, and I'll get to that in a second.
Before you do, is your argument only then that the evidence wasn't material, not that it was not new evidence? And did you argue below that the evidence was not new, or did you essentially concede that issue?
We did essentially concede that issue, Your Honor.
Then how come you argue otherwise today?
It's not about whether it was new. It's about whether it was material. And the retrospective
factor. But it seems highly material to me in that it, even looking at this brief report from Dr. Neville that we have in the appendix to the petitioner's brief, where he alludes to a 20-year course of treatment, 20 different medications, several therapies, and so on. This is not even mildly plausible as something since January. I know you kind of float that as a speculative thought, but it seems to me quite clear that Dr. Neville is looking at a broad range of materials in this man's record. And having two doctors, especially an agency doctor who has no axe to grind at all for anybody, what does he care? You know, he's just giving his opinion. Seems to me very likely could influence. I don't know if it will. I mean, maybe the finding would still be not disabled, but that's not the issue.
Sure,
could it influence?
Well, thank you, Your Honor. First of all, Dr. Neville certainly does refer to some of appellant's treatment history going back 20 years. He has a very, very short summary about that. That someone
and he didn't talk to Mr. Gossett. He didn't examine Mr. Gossett. This has to have been from a paper file.
Correct. And Your Honor, reviewing that summary of information, however, does not make the opinion itself retrospective. When it comes to the opinion, Dr. Neville checked a box on the first page of the assessment indicating that this was an assessment for a, quote, current evaluation, end quote. And then when Dr. Neville went on to give an opinion about functional limitations, Dr. Neville used only the present tense. Dr. Neville was not tasked with assessing appellant's condition prior to January 28, 2010. Therefore, he didn't. The fact that he reviewed some of the history, some of the evidence, does not make that opinion retrospective, we would argue.
Dr. Tandy states claimant's functioning has steadily declined since 07 and that he's unable to maintain gainful employment. That's what he says.
Yes, and again, I would argue that that's...
So that goes way back before 2012.
Absolutely. And, Your Honor, we would argue that that's not actually though Dr. Neville's formulated opinion about what appellant's limitations were or were not. That's in the doctor's review of what was before the doctor.
Is Neville supposed to give a present condition? Is that his assignment? What is his purpose as far as whatever he's doing? You can say they're steadily declining. Well, one can look at some sort of a slanted line and then say, well, here's where we are now, and he's hit the bottom line, or whatever you want to call it. But I guess that's where it is. If it's all comes down to materiality, then it's a matter of what, not only the present, but how he arrived at the present. And I guess that's where this gets sort of wobbly, I guess.
Yes, Your Honor, and of course it would have been very nice to have a more detailed narrative from Dr. Neville, you know, to even explain exactly which of Dr. Tandy's opinions he was considering. As we did point out, Dr. Tandy issued at least one opinion that postdated the ALJ's decision.
But, you know, the date on Dr. Neville's report is July 28, 2010, and according to your logic, that because he's using the present tense, they shouldn't have even taken it back to January, because Dr. Neville was talking about July 28th, 2010 and his position then. So you don't really mean that there is no retrospective quality. And so the only question is how much, and should we give the appeals counsel the opportunity to make that call?
Well, Your Honor, on that note, you are right that there's a retrospective quality for roughly 6 months' worth. But again, this piece of evidence, Dr. Neville is not tasked with looking at the appellant's condition as of January 27th, the day before, or the years past there.
Yeah, but if it can be retrospective for 6 months, why not 12 months? I mean, for all I know, the Appeals Council would draw some line. I don't know what they would do, but I just find it very hard to say it's not material at all.
Well, Your Honor, and I do want to touch on another reason why this is not material. Even if this opinion, Dr. Neville's opinion, is viewed as retrospective, the fact of the matter is that that does not necessarily make it material. The ALJ in this case thoroughly considered and analyzed hundreds of pages of contemporaneous medical records and other records. ALJ based her decision on a variety of evidence, including appellant's activities, which included volunteering at a library, working out at home, working out at YMCA, taking music lessons, performing in an orchestra. The ALJ noted the opinion of a treating doctor, Dr. Fadley, and made findings consistent with Dr. Fadley's reports. The ALJ reviewed treatment notes and noted how those indicated only mild or moderate symptoms. The ALJ stressed evidence that appellant's condition had not changed much since the time period when he was actually still working. And the point of this is, appellant has not met his burden to show that Dr. Neville's opinion was reasonably likely to change this very well-supported finding by the ALJ. So even if Dr. Neville's opinion was retrospective, even if Dr. Neville had explicitly stated, these limitations go back to for so long, his opinion would not be material because a single assessment performed by a non-examining, non-treating medical source penned well after the ALJ issued her decision would not be reasonably likely to change the ALJ's findings, which were based on treating source opinions, treatment records, appellant's testimony, appellant's activities, appellant's and other evidence. And once again, we do stress that appellant has not argued that the ALJ erred in any way, shape, or form in analyzing the evidence that was before her at the time.
Now, I assume with Dr. Neville, let's call the short-term retrospective back to January, I assume there's nothing between January and when he actually signed his opinion, there's nothing in addition to, he didn't consider something additionally, I understand. Is that right?
Well,
there wasn't something that happened between January and, was it August or July, whenever he issued this. Is that right?
Well, not necessarily.
Did he examine him? Did he have some other information besides what took place before January?
Dr. Neville did not examine the appellant.
I know. Now, so I'm saying, is there something more besides what took place January before?
Appellant did submit to the Appeals Council several reports by Dr. Tandy, one of which post-stated the ALJ's decision.
And Neville had that?
Yes. If that was in the record, if that was submitted, then Dr. Neville would have had that. And any other information, it's entirely possible there was more information. In 6 months' time, that who knows how much information that would do. But again, we at least know that there was another opinion by Dr. Tandy that was written after January 27th.
What did that one say?
I'm sorry?
What did Tandy's last opinion say?
I believe it was in...
I don't care about the date. Just what addition did he say? What did he say in addition to what he had done over the last 20 years?
Your Honor, I'm sorry.
I don't want to take any more time.
And another fact kind of stressed on this issue is the fact that Dr. Neville's assessment was done for purposes of appellant's second disability application, not his first application, which is the matter before this court. The agency gave Dr. Neville's assessment its due weight with regard to appellant's second application. The agency was not obligated to give it weight with respect to that first application in that case. And again, the burden is on appellant to prove that any additional evidence is material in this case. It's up to appellant to show that there was additional evidence proving disability as of January 27, 2010 or earlier. The only evidence that appellant relies on is an opinion that resulted in a finding that the appellant was disabled a day later.
I'm actually going to have to cut you off.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honors.
I'm sorry.
That's all right. Thank you, Your Honors.
How much time? 1 minute.
Thank you. Just want to reiterate, again, there's only one issue here. There's no issue of newness. There's no issue of good cause. It's simply a matter of, is Dr. Neville's assessment material? And the definition of that is there a reasonable probability that if the ALJ, if given the chance to see Dr. Neville's assessment, there's a reasonable probability that she would approve the claim back further than January 28th of 2010. Thank you very much.
I thank both of you. And the case will be taken under advisement.